These are the droids you're looking for.
Over here!
Death Star alert.
You're looking for.
This is madness.
It blew my mind when I read about it.
No, it's 100% going to be the best film in the franchise.
This is madness.
Star Wars is only now starting.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that?
These are the droids you're looking for.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that? You talking to
these are the droids I felt looking nauseous for. With just pure excitement.
These are the droids you're looking for.
Why isn't it December 15th already?
And then I saw the Porg for the first time speaking.
And I'll tell you what, it really whets the appetite.
These are the droids you're looking for.
This is madness.
Welcome back to The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Chris, Ryan, and Sam, I am Mike, and we are counting down the days to Solo, a Star Wars Story. We have reached the point where we can finally see it on the horizon, but we still can't get tickets. I'm not quite sure why we have no ability to buy tickets for this movie yet. We'll talk about that in a moment, but there was a new featurette released on Sunday behind the scenes of Solo, a Star Wars Story. And guys, before we get to any comments, let's just play this real quickly. Hear from Alden Ehrenreich, as well as Donald Glover, Ron Howard, and then we'll talk a little bit about this featurette, which gives us a little bit more of a view of what this movie is actually going to be.
The Star Wars universe that we see in Solo was different from anything else that we've seen in any previous Star Wars movies. The Empire controls everything. Everyone is struggling to survive, but we discover this incredibly free spirit.
We're meeting Han right before he becomes the Han that we know. You end up getting to see how this guy got to be the way he is. It's all part of this great expansion of the Han Solo world.
It's a rite of passage.
You look good.
The tests he needs to face, the challenges he has to endure to become
Han Solo.
Those first encounters with Chewbacca.
You're gonna need a nickname, because I ain't saying that every time.
With the Millennium Falcon. With Lando Calrissian.
Did you win your ship playing cards?
I like this kid.
They're in this movie.
I'm a driver. A great pilot.
He's the most exciting character in the saga for me. You don't know what he's gonna do.
I'm a terrible person.
He's reckless.
He does these stupid things that should never work. And they do.
I'm fine!
And he does it with bravado. I might be the only person who knows what you really are.
What's that?
Before that featurette, would any of you have ever used the words free spirit and Han Solo together?
Honestly, I don't know. Yeah,
I wouldn't have used it, but I mean, I see what they're saying with it, but that is funny. Listening to it, so I just had audio there. I didn't have, like, I wasn't watching as you played it, Mike. I was just listening. And so, you know, it's like I'm listening to everything they're saying, and there's like so many generic things that all of them say.
Dude, like, speaking of generic, Ron Howard literally says the Millennium Falcon, Chewbacca, Lando Calrissian, they're all in this movie. Clint Howard, like, he's there too.
He's not even selling it. He's just saying, this is a movie with that stuff in it.
That said, so we started, you threw me with that first question, because I would say this. Watching this just, you know, a few, I don't know, an hour or two ago, I'm back in it now. it's been such a yo-yo for me with this movie, where I thought, like, I didn't want it to get made at all. Then I've been kind of, you know, enjoying watching all, like, the terrible behind the scenes stuff, and the first trailer and teaser did not get me at all. But then The second trailer, if you know, people can go back through. We've talked about every one of these things on their own episodes on the pod, and like I was on board and TV spots lately. I have not liked them, but this one, I love that music that's just playing in the background. Now I hate it again.
Oh no!
That nice cowboy walking into a bar music.
Yeah, exactly.
Right at the very end where it's.
Yeah. It sounds like Once Upon a Time in the West.
We know this takes place in space, but it's really more of a Western.
That's never been said before.
Crossed with a 50s car movie.
Yeah.
That being said, the footage that we saw, what surprised me in this the most was all the war stuff.
Yeah.
He's like a soldier. I thought that was interesting. Yeah. That's an aspect that I didn't even think about.
That's kind of going back to that rumor I heard that it might take place over different time periods. So I don't know, maybe if we get a little war flashback kind of thing.
Oh, that's interesting. It reminded me, the war sequences reminded me really strongly of two things. First, I was like, oh, we kind of just had this with Finn, like a hero who was part of the Empire/First Order who like couldn't hang. Because they were like so awful. And so like it feels like they're kind of setting Han up a bit like that. Like, oh, he's not actually a soldier. He like signed up and then war got to him. And then the other thing, it also reminded me a lot of like, what's the TV show? Is it Firefly or Serenity? Which one's the show?
It looks exactly like the battle. I'm glad you brought it up. It looks exactly like the Battle of Serenity.
Yeah,
the first episode of Firefly.
Yeah, it reminded me of that, and I don't mean to disparage like the effects or anything. I don't think it looks cheap, you know, and I don't think the TV show necessarily did. Like, they look appropriately scaled to their budget for the most part, but like it was just
also 15 years ago and on Fox. Yeah,
it was so reminiscent, like just in terms of like the movements, the lighting, the sort of the way they're depicting. The horrors and atrocity of war on a character. It was like, you know, the shaky cam and everything. It just took me right back to that.
To Captain Malcolm Reynolds' time.
Yes.
The Battle of Serenity, where he and Zoe were the only two that got out.
Let's get a round of applause for Ryan, everybody.
Yeah.
Just what happened, I'm just saying.
Wow. The fire cast.
Was he wearing an AT-AT pilot helmet?
It kind of looked like that.
It did look like it. Good call. I didn't catch that.
Nice grab. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
That shot of the AT-AT is really cool, where it's kind of like through fog, and it looks like it's like falling over. I just thought it was really visceral. That was a really cool shot. I was interested by that whole aspect of the featurette.
It
made me just think again about what I had initially thought when they said they were making a Han Solo movie, which is I only want to think of him as a smuggler throughout the galaxy. I don't want to think of him as at one point signing up to work with the Empire, even if he didn't have any other choices. And between the teaser and what we see here, it appears, as you mentioned, Sam, that maybe this is a similar arc to Finn, not necessarily seeing an atrocity, but just deciding, I don't want any part of this, I'm out. And I just kind of always thought of him as being in the position where he was a smuggler, and I didn't want to see more, but we're in this position now, and we're all in, I guess.
I understand. There is something a little, I hate to use a word so like simple, but cooler about the idea of Han Solo kind of like being born hating the Empire.
Yeah.
Like it's just like in his blood, as opposed to like something needed to happen to convince
him. He's always been
that
a rebel.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, but I don't know if that kind of goes back to his... I mean, I feel like there's always been like, obviously there's always been a moral compass battle with Han Solo as a character, right? Yeah. It's like who shot first, that the whole debate, if we accept that that's a debate. I think that they're leaning into the idea that Han shot at the same time, I think, with this kind of approach, really, rather than him just being an outright, like, doesn't stand for any kind of institution, anarchist kind of guy.
That's interesting. I don't know what you guys are saying. It like makes me think, you know, maybe the other version. And I mean, at some point we can do this. We could do it all day of like coming up with, you know, alternate versions of movies than what we got. But like there's like a version where it almost feels like rather than, you know, bad experiences with the Empire, you know, Han it should have been more like just like socioeconomics, like, you know, born poor, scrapper, like always on the fringe. Like that's kind of what I think you guys might be saying. And I'm sort of agreeing. Like it would be interesting, just like he was always outside. He was always a kind of outcast, didn't fit in, always hustling just to like make
ends meet. Kind of like a stray.
Yeah.
And then
Seems like they're leaning into more of like a real, you know, a bigger quote unquote arc, you know, where it's got higher highs and lower lows for him or something.
But it's like, also not just reminiscent of Finn. It's also of Jyn Erso. A similar thing.
Yeah.
I feel like there's already the trailer voiceover I can hear for that, which the only thing he had going for him is he could talk his way out of anything.
Well, what I think is interesting that like not a lot of people are talking about is that obviously I am not in this camp, but a lot of people have problems with Star Wars prequels, and this is a Star Wars prequel. And it is shedding light on information. A lot of the things that people didn't like about the prequels, aside from execution, you know, whatever, again, I don't agree with them, but is that it told us things about characters that made them less interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the fear with this movie is kind of that, like we just said, it's kind of like disappointing if Han Solo needed, like, if they need to flesh out a reason for him to like just not like authority, you know, like some people just don't like authority kind of inherently. Obviously I'm excited about the movie. We, like Sam said, that it's been quite a roller coaster in terms of being excited and not excited. I'm maintaining my excitement. I think it looks very cool, but I do think that is like a genuine concern in terms of it being like, oh, this was kind of better left unanswered, or like in my head that he was just this person who kind of drifted around space until we met him.
Because by doing that, when he leaves in A New Hope, you're like, oh, he's just going, like, he's like, where's he going? Like, that's such a great mystery to have. And then when he comes back.
Well, there's also this mix and like this balance of whenever you do get into the territory of like, you know, prequels or like origin stories to characters, there's this fine line that creators have to walk, which is like they have to nail it from the standpoint of like giving kind of everybody exactly what they wanted. Like they need to like nail the idea of like somehow what they show us is all what we kind of expected about Han, but then simultaneously you need to surprise us. Like you know, the odds are, I mean, anything that we're tossing out on this podcast like right now as ideas, you know, they're all just like our first thoughts, they're kind of instincts, and like there's a day, you know, that can't be the movie, because if it's the first thing everybody thinks of, it's like, who wants to watch it, you know? So it's like, you need to find something that's maybe slightly less obvious. Maybe it's not the, like, you know, it's not the text that we already know.
Right.
But yet, I think what we're all expressing is going like, oh man, if they're trying to over-explain, like, the reason Han acts the way he does in A New Hope or an Empire,
but,
it's more fun for us to not have known. Like,
I think
the fun part.
I think the hope there, though, is that we have Larry Kasdan writing this, who's like basically worked with Harrison Ford characters almost exclusively. And I feel has such like a sacredness to it, or maybe not, maybe, but I feel like he's going to protect that spirit.
That's, you know, he's an interesting part of this little clip when he's talking and like really, you know, emphasizing, you know, you never know what he's going to do. This is the most fun character to write. I mean, That makes me excited, you know, whenever a writer can explain why they were excited to write the thing, you know, it's a little bit more of that like generic, you know, stuff that I was talking about earlier, but I don't know. His presence worked for me in this little, you know, featurette.
Which leads me to some of the other quotes. I feel like we should go through what was said, even if it was generic, because it might lead us to a little bit more. And I'm glad you brought up the Kasdan side of things, because I was glad that he was in there as well, especially after the first quote from Ron Howard saying, the Star Wars universe, we see Solo in a different way than anything we've seen in any of the Star Wars movies. The Empire controls everything. Pretty sure the Empire controlled everything at the start of A New Hope.
He's never seen the movie.
But
he's never seen them.
It made me think that Ron Howard honestly just directed what was on the page and didn't do any more research and put together his scenes and got them done in three takes and moved on. And thank God Kasdan's a part of this. But some
that sounds exactly like Ron Howard.
Well, and when did when would he have had time to do research, you know?
True, coming in so late.
I thought it was very strange that at the end of the trailer he says, "And it was arrested development." Very strange.
We get the line from Donald Glover, though. We're meeting Han right before he becomes the Han that we know, which tells us one thing. Maybe this is a little bit closer to the timeline of A New Hope than we initially believed.
Facial morph. They got to do a facial morph. Or they need to end this movie by them saying, "Han, you better get some plastic surgery. You got to change your face. They're looking
They should do. They're getting so good at the performance capture. They should just do. They should just do the little dots on his face and then build a digital young Harrison Ford.
I mean,
this is actually
sure they pitched that idea at one point. I bet.
This is interesting, actually. Just on top of the featurette, I'm looking at Twitter, and this just came in. They just revealed that when Alden Ehrenreich, he was actually fired with Lord and Miller, and then they had Harrison Ford mocap Alden Ehrenreich for the rest of the movie. Wow, that's amazing.
That's crazy. That's dedication.
That's a key bit of breaking news on the Droid Pod.
Yeah, that's an exclusive.
That's an exclusive. Locked in a podcast.
Alden did have the comment in this featurette where he said, "It's all part of the great expansion of the Han Solo world," which when you factor in that we also know that he's signed up for 3 films, if this does well and he is successful in his portrayal of Han Solo, are we getting a Han Solo prequel trilogy? If there's enough time, they can say, hey, we can do this within a 2-year time period of the series.
I'm still a believer that we're going to get we're going to have 3 movies that are set in this little world realm. Cause we have the introduction of those gangs as well, like Kanja Club in, The Force Awakens. Like, I think that they're going to kind of expand that side of the lore. And also imagine this: Solo colon Lando, Solo colon Chewie.
I would love a solo movie about those guys without Han Solo in it.
It's like the Solo series.
Solo Origins, Lando, A Star Wars Story.
No, I think it's interesting. This is something else, though, Chris. Just when you're talking about this time period, these movies that are like the Star Wars stories that we're getting. Mm-hmm. This is also going back. They do seem to really have, maybe if not a mandate, a genuine interest in like reminding us that it's wars. You know what I mean? Like Star Wars, it's not just a smuggler story, and Rogue One wasn't like Rogue One was, again, people describe it, you know, boots on the ground, you know, team on a mission, like war story. And we're clearly getting at least some segment of Solo is going to really focus on the aspect of like, no, this is like a violent time in the galaxy's history, and there were actively like battalions and wars going on.
Oh, I thought you said Italians.
I mean, who knows? They might be out there. You never
know. Han Solo, I mean, famously hates Italians.
But he loves the bolognese. But, but it's just interesting that they are like focusing on the idea of like the war landscape. And, you know, if we're all kind of anticipating that the next thing they announce would be an Obi-Wan story, I wonder if there will be some real like warfare depicted in that as well.
Yeah.
I think that obviously a lot of it rides on how well this movie does. Which will be like a huge deciding factor in this if they want to like sweep it under the rug, you know. But I will say, I think that I did take, this is kind of like picking nits, but like I took a little bit of issue with Alden Ehrenreich saying that this will expand the Solo universe, because I was like, you know, that you could have just said Star Wars, right? You know, feels like they're kind of distancing it already.
You know, it's not a like that. Like, everybody loves Han Solo, but like, it's because he's part of Star Wars. That
yeah, it's like if they said, like, we're trying to expand the Kylo Ren universe, and you'd be like,
right,
what?
Right, right, right.
Like, it just seemed like a very, like, I was, the fact that he would say that just worried me.
The Han Solo universe. It turns out we never got the rights to use any of the Star Wars stuff in this movie.
My God, imagine it's like a Marvel and Fox thing where they're like,
yeah, right.
You can call him Solo, but you can't call him Han. Yeah.
It's right. The 30 Rock episode about the Janis Joplin biopic that they couldn't actually name after her.
Right, yeah. Right.
One other line that we didn't touch
Solo,
on.
A story.
One other line that we didn't touch on was Emilia Clarke talking about the bravado of Han Solo. He does these stupid things that should never work out, but they do, and he does it with bravado. And then they show a clip of him jumping, and he yells and says, oh, I'm fine. And that, to me, was like, wait, what was that? That didn't really work. I thought it was a scene that maybe should have been left on the cutting room floor, at least that clip.
Maybe they should have waited until they had our money already to show us that.
Yeah,
I thought it was a weirdly like small jump.
Yeah, exactly. Something.
Like I've seen Butch and Sundance jump off the side of a cliff, and then he jumped like 20 feet, and was like, okay, whatever. But I will say, Mike.
Right before he jumps, though, he does say, "I can't swim."
I would love a Butch and Sundance.
And he also says, like, I hate snakes.
But Mike, you told me like you were partially excited that this is going to be really my introduction to Emilia Clarke as an actor. And just even in this clip, I was like, oh, she is charismatic. She is compelling. Like seeing her as an actress talk about the movie, but then also we got just slightly longer looks at the brief scenes they've already revealed of hers in the movie. And I tipped my cat to you.
Her enthusiasm was palpable in that.
I don't know why you guys are so harsh on this train sequence. I think it's gotta be awesome.
Ugh, I'm gonna fall asleep.
Like he was flying in a spaceship in a high speed train. That's why it was dangerous that he jumped off of a spaceship onto a train.
Did you see where they're flying with like part of the train attached?
Yeah,
that was cool. I hope that there's a whole sequence where they're driving around with that thing attached to their speeders through Rio de Janeiro, slamming into cop cars, causing havoc.
Just a mashup of every single franchise. Put it into one. Patton Oswalt predicted it. It's going to happen.
That's right.
Ron Howard saw that movie, then forgot about it, and then was like, I had this idea.
Like, wait a second. Nobody went. It was too late. They didn't want to tell him.
I couldn't help but notice that a line seems to have changed from the trailer to this featurette. He says, I'm a driver. I'm a great pilot because they got rid of the line of I'm a flyer, which is still in the second trailer if you watched on YouTube. But he says, I'm a great pilot. Basically, whoever's editing the trailers and making this movie listened to this podcast and heard that we said that flyer sounded very dumb.
Yeah, because no one in the history of the world has been referred to as a flyer.
If you got both, on a plane and the pilot over the intercom said, I'm a very professional flyer, you would get off
ladies
the
and gentlemen,
plane.
I'm a flyer. This is your flyer speaking.
Flyers
I'm a very good
like,
flyer.
Flyers are the people on the planes, like frequent flyers. But
yeah,
maybe
right?
he meant
I think,
that he doesn't get nervous.
I think
like I'm
both.
A bad flyer. I do say that. I'm a bad flyer.
They're
maybe
all gonna be
like,
all these lines are gonna be in the movie though.
You're right. We gotta be careful what we say. We're writing the movie right now.
The other one that stood out, I think, was the only other real line that we had not heard before, which was, you're going to need a nickname because I ain't saying that every time, which I kind of liked. I thought that was funny. It makes me wonder, what is Chewbacca's actual name if he needs a nickname?
What
it did make me worry about was like, oh, God, are they going to explain everything? Like, is he going to put on a jacket and be like, but my arms are so warm. Could it just be a vest?
I'm concerned about, I mean, this has been my refrain from the very beginning, but like, I am concerned that it's like, they are explaining everything. And Ron Howard talks about like, oh yeah, it's the, you know, first time he meets Chewie, we're going to see them meet him for the first few times or whatever. And it's like, I don't know. I mean, any one of those things is okay. You know, if you build a great movie around this character and it's doing its own thing, right? And as part of that movie, he happens to meet Chewbacca, that's right. exciting. Or if he's friends with Chewbacca throughout this great movie and they happen to like find and take ownership of the Falcon, that's great. Yeah. But the idea of like, I think they're doing it all. They're like, we're going to tell you why he goes by Han Solo, why he's a scoundrel, why how he met Chewie, how why yeah. he calls him Chewie, how he met Lando, where they right. found the Falcon. Yeah. Did he win it in a game? Also, oh, that, look, it's the Kessel Run. And it's like, God, it's just it's a little box it's a little everything we know.
It's a little offensive also to the Kashyyyk people because it's like, well, I'm not calling yeah. you that.
Three you syllables.
Something. Yeah, I can't call you that. That's I nonsense. Also,
Sam, what you just said, like, it kind of articulates it well. And like, just to boil it down, I'm realizing that my reservations about this movie are this. I'm totally in for a young Han Solo story. I'm not sure I'm interested in a Han Solo origin story.
Yeah, good call.
Yep. And those are like that's very it. Different yeah. things.
We don't need the origin.
I'll accept my award. I'll accept my Webby later.
But Sam, well, the like... one thing that we talked about before, and I know it's hard for me to kind of see it this way as well, but if you go in expecting all of those things you don't want and you just know they're going to be a part of it, again, it might help you enjoy it a little bit more. I'm at least that is how I'm framing it in my own mind so that I can enjoy this movie.
That's some prequel rationalization. I like it.
Another thing is, you know, things being well done and well made and well played and well directed makes a pretty enormous difference. You know, like if it right. is, if it is like, if it is a box ticking, like, oh, we got to hit on each of these things, but it's really well done, I'll probably be distracted enough by the spectacle that I'm watching to like not mind that. I think I'm a pretty forgiving like movie watcher, especially for someone who's as like, I mean, I'm on a podcast where we exclusively talk about one franchise of films. So like I watch them pretty. Thank you, Chris. It's Star Wars, everybody. Sorry.
Oh, Chris, you're going to be so
we didn't get the rights.
Chris is going to be very upset in a few minutes.
But like the idea of like being a really critical cinema goer and like movie watcher, but being, I think I'm pretty forgiving, but the idea is like, if you're just box ticking and there are like the seams are showing or it's like flawed.
Yeah, you're
it's
right.
It's really hard to like get into it. And so, if, you know, we'll see, you know,
if I could once again, boil down what you just said, Sam, if it's good, you'll like it. If it's not, you probably won't.
Which is why I say you should always trust my opinion.
If I like it, I'll like it. If I don't, I won't.
Can I pitch you a scenario? George Lucas just wrote The Phantom Menace, right? He just wrote that movie.
He finally finished it, huh?
He finished it. He got it done, and he's putting it into production, and now he has to write Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. One of his ideas for Revenge of the Sith was to have a 10-year-old Han Solo wandering around Kashyyyk.
Is this real?
Wait, this is a real thing. Yeah.
Sorry, Chris. You said let me pitch you on something.
On this idea. Yeah. So this was originally written.
I love that. That's an infinitely better idea than this.
A
movie.
Young boy on Kashyyyk, and that's where he met Chewie.
Wait. Hold on.
I love it.
Sam, you're using the word infinitely better for that, for a young Han Solo wandering around Kashyyyk.
At 10 years
that's
old.
Great.
No,
that's why he can That's why he can understand Chewie.
I guess it does explain that.
It's great. I love it.
Oh my god! If in this movie we have to watch
what I've seen so far of Solo.
If in this movie we have to watch Han taking like speech lessons
to like learn.
No, you know, there's going to be a scene where he says to Chewbacca, "Slow down, slow down," and then he picks it up syllable by syllable.
I guess. Well, my point is that we could have had either the little kid origin story, or we got the older adult Han Solo origin story. So I think that we got the better of the two.
I'm more wondering how this 10-year-old ended up alone on a planet.
Yeah, I'm curious about that movie. Nothing to be curious about.
Is it the
Solo
Jungle
story?
Book Han Solo style where he's left on Kashyyyk and he's Mowgli and he's raised by the Chewie?
Oh my gosh! Now that's kind of cool. Now I'm on board.
Oh, I hate the three of you.
I like that.
When Sam agreed, it was stupid, but now It's pretty cool.
I got them Wookiee necessities.
Chris, that may be my favorite thing you've ever done.
That should be the new intro to the podcast.
I think we've pretty much gone through the featurette. I don't know if there's anything better we can say after that. But there is, Chris, when you brought up the time period of when George Lucas was writing The Phantom Menace and getting ready for the next two films, it made me wonder if you were going to bring up if you had a time stone and could go back and change the history of the prequels because you somehow found a time stone. Well, that brings us to...
Speaking of infinity better ideas...
Avengers Infinity War opened this past weekend, and with Marvel being so closely connected to the leadership of Disney, which also runs Lucasfilm, it's an interesting cross post between the two that we need to address and consider and think about. And I think all of us have now seen the movie. We can talk about it as a film, how we react to it a little bit, and then also how it plays into what we expect from Star Wars and how it set the groundwork for the cinematic universe, but what this movie may mean for what we see going forward. And I'll kind of start it out from my perspective, but go ahead, Sam.
We should just say this part moving forward, we will have spoilers, I assume, for Infinity War.
Yes.
So if there's anybody listening who hasn't seen it and is, you know, also into that that series of films, maybe hold this till after you've seen it.
Also, just worth noting, just to because of the Star Wars connection, it beat The Force Awakens for the highest opening weekend this weekend.
Yeah, 250 million to The Force Awakens, 248 million.
Which is that something where you get Marvel people out and they're celebrating and rubbing it in the face of Star Wars fans? Does that happen kind of like a sports team?
I think everybody's too busy swimming in their money like Scrooge.
They're all laughing on the way to the bank.
I'm actually just talking about the fanboys. Are Marvel fanboys out looking for Star Wars fans? Anybody wearing a Star Wars t-shirt and saying, hey, beat you at the box office?
I think the Venn diagram for those overlaps quite a bit.
I think you're probably looking at a perfect circle.
Who loves Marvel but hates Star Wars? And are they listening to this
They're
podcast?
Out there.
I do think it's the answer, though, Mike, to the question you opened the podcast with of as to why Solo tickets aren't on sale yet.
Oh, good point.
I think they're waiting. They're waiting for Infinity War to clean house, and then before they say, like, turn back on the vacuum cleaner over everyone's wallets.
Yep. And also,
just saving $16 to only see one movie in May.
Yeah.
We live in New York. It's $16 to go see a movie. It's offensive.
$17.50 if you want to buy dinner while you watch the movie.
you were trying to start off.
We're good. I'm just kind of curious, Chris, what dinner are you getting for $1.50 on top of your $16 ticket?
Oh, no, that just enables you the option to buy more food. It gives you the option.
Chris did. I saw this movie with Chris, as did Sam and Nicole. Nicole was sitting next to Chris, I believe. Chris ordered Reese's Pieces for what were they, like $17?
Yes.
Brought straight to him,
though.
Pound,
though.
It was amazing.
All right, I say rapid fire. We go around, brief reaction, and we'll talk a little bit more about it. I thought it was a great, awe-inspiring spectacle of a film. I don't know if it was a story that worked for me because it's not a complete story. It's part one of two, and it didn't really feel like in part one they finished off enough for me to have left feeling somewhat satisfied. And I have issues overall, not necessarily with this movie, but issues with Marvel that are extending to why maybe I didn't enjoy this as much as I could, but I am still blown away by the achievement that they could bring all of these different characters and all of these different stories together into what was at least a semblance of a story that made sense and had some pretty incredible moments within it. So I think it's good. I enjoyed it, but I did feel a little bit unsatisfied.
I felt that it was the perfect analogy. It was analogous to a movie as a giant crossover comic book event could be. It was thrilling. It was emotional. It was funny. It checked all the boxes that we wanted it to. It was also very messy and imbalanced and things like that. I didn't think that detracted from it too much. Mm-hmm. I loved watching the movie. These Marvel movies, you know, it's tough. We're 19 movies in at this point, and it's like, obviously I love these movies, so I could acknowledge the flaws of it as a film, but within the context of it, be like, this was as fulfilling an experience as I could hope for after it building to this for 10 years. It was never mm-hmm. going to be a perfect movie, and it was never going to stand alone. It just couldn't. But I thought that it was absolutely thrilling to witness and so expensive looking.
Yeah, I think it was a big risk what they did ultimately, like, to have that. This movie happened is quite a feat, just like on a technical, just logistical, just studio. Nothing like this has quite been done. The equation has always been, they say, like, this is Marvel's Empire Strikes Back. And I don't know if that's a fair way to equate it. And I think maybe that's just because tonally how it ends and kind of the problems that it proposes into the next one. But they were able to, they kind of had, if that's the way they're pitching this, then it feels like, what am I trying to say? It's like, there's two parts to the Avengers, right? The final one, is that true? Is that what's going to happen? So
yeah.
is this next one going to kind of end the whole series? I think that's going to shape my opinion of this movie. Like, what does the next Avengers do for the whole series?
I think my ultimate evaluation of Infinity War is gonna like depend a little bit on Avengers 4.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and I get, you guys have, a couple of you have like already said that. I think what Infinity War did that was maybe the most exciting was, I was like, oh man, when they sew this up with Avengers 4. These two movies are going to be so, so satisfying to watch as like a capstone to 10 years. You know, like, I think they proved they could do it. I agree. Mm-hmm. I think like, Ryan, you pretty much nailed exactly what I thought. I thought the biggest thing for me was like, oh, the Russos were hired because, you know, everybody was so impressed with how they balanced, you know, multiple storylines and gave every character something to do. And I felt like, you know, Infinity War, they did it a little less elegantly than with Civil War. You know, it was, the pacing was choppy. It was like a couple of times they cut back to some characters who were on a different storyline. And I was like, oh, yeah, that reminds me how long it's been since we've seen these people.
Mm-hmm.
But my God, the quality of like, just like visually what this movie was like, they put the money behind this one to, like, you know, Thanos and his, you know, four horsemen. I know that's not what they're called.
The children of Thanos.
The children of Thanos, and Thanos were like, they looked incredible. The scope and scale of like how much was moving and how much was going on screen pretty much from start to finish was great. And I think for me, the biggest standout was like, I thought Thor kind of stole the movie from a character standpoint, and that really psychs me up, because like, I loved Ragnarok and I thought, oh, it's great, like, Thor finally got one. And then I feel like they delivered even further on it with where Infinity War sent him. I had a blast. The one thing it was dark and it was heavy, and it's like, I don't know when I'm gonna watch it again, whereas with the other movies I left the theater being like, I'm ready to walk into the next theater and see it again. You know,
the ending of this movie was like, not even for a Marvel movie, it was genuinely chilling.
Yeah,
it was. And I think like, that was the one thing, I think I texted you guys, I think what it, if there's one thing I would have added to this already like super stuffed movie, was I did want the scene that you do get at the end of Empire, where they're looking out from the ship and there is something hopeful. You know, you see like, all, so much has been lost at the end of Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
And Luke has just had this chilling revelation about his parentage, and he's lost his hand. And it's like, And Han is gone, and like everything is hopeless. And then they stand and they look out over that galaxy, over the nebula, and it's like there's hope. And I do feel like Infinity War like left that shot out.
Well,
it was pretty hopeless at the end.
But that to me, though, that to me makes it feel like it's like unfinished.
Right, right. I don't know.
As opposed to like, kind of Empire got like a finality with that, having that shot, that kind of ramp up. But Infinity War, it really just seems like, well, I'll see you in a year.
Like, right, and I don't know how
it didn't have that same. It didn't have that same feeling.
Sam, I have to say, there's hope if you believe that Thanos is the protagonist of this film, because Thanos,
which I do, yes,
Thanos ended up bringing hope back to the universe.
It is actually, you know what,
guys, keep an eye on Mike.
That is actually an interesting. So I'm almost now. I'm looking back and going, so is that the shot that I'm talking about? Maybe it is. Maybe it's maybe they did that shot and they did it with Thanos, and it's meant to be all the more chilling that they go, you know, that maybe the goal is to make you question, oh, was he right? You know, and I don't think anybody who saw the movie is going to think that, but they definitely made a compelling and sympathetic, more sympathetic than he ever had any right
can
to
I,
be.
Can I quote the most recent episode of Barry? You'd have to be a complete effing psychopath to see that as hopeful at the end.
I was really shocked in a good way, although there were times I think they went a little too far with it. But like, okay, so my favorite show ever is The Leftovers. Like, I adore that show, and like the ending of this movie is like the conceit of The Leftovers, essentially. And that show is about like the exploration of like misery after catastrophe. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is a Marvel movie. And that's, it just seemed like quite a dichotomy. And like, you know, don't get me wrong, I was like, wow, they really swung really hard. But to speaking to what you're saying, Sam, like about the finality of this, it's like what Empire has that this one was missing is simply what made Empire feel like it was full and but still a chapter in a story is that at the end they were like, this is what occurred and this is the plan. Mm-hmm. And so the cliffhanger was like, how will that plan go? As opposed to Empire ending when Luke is dangling from the antenna on Bespin and us being like, oh God, what's going to happen to Luke? You know, because now all the conversation is like, how do they even get out of this? As opposed to it being like, oh wow, like how are they going to execute this plan they may have? Mm-hmm. Like, we don't even, the Avengers aren't even, quote unquote,
there's not even, there is no plan. They like, there is no vector or course of action. I also was expecting the song Mad World to start playing and everyone was disappearing. I feel like I know it's been used epically. I think we could open that up again. We should have started it.
Sam, you brought up, I didn't notice this until you brought it up, that the ones that are left are the original Avengers. Assuming that Hawkeye is alive somewhere.
I was just going to bring that up. And what a great motivation would be, because he had a pretty big family. And so if half of everyone is gone, you know what I mean? Like, he'd have a heck of a motivation to avenge some people.
The studio also has half more of the budget.
But the idea, I was actually just going to bring up the same point, which they really did kind of beautifully set up Chris. If you're saying, well, is this actually like an ending to what they've done? I mean, I think they have plans going far, far beyond, but I do think that, like, man, they set it up for, you know, Cap, Banner, Iron Man, Thor, Black Widow, Hawkeye to really like have to come together. And it's that core team that we started with in 2012 that we saw built over the 4 years prior. You know, it can pack some. And we also never got in Infinity War. We never got the reconciliation between Tony and Cap. And so they're spacing that out, you know, for almost 3 years and how many films before we see them have a conversation. Like, I'm really, really excited for what the fourth film is going to bring. And it does feel like Infinity War was like a big and very successful setup for like what's coming.
Sam, I agree with you, and I'm very excited for what's next. And I love this entire franchise. I love what they've done in the 10 years, but I do, I want to bring up my gripe with Marvel, and there's a couple of different things I have, so I might be getting on a soapbox here in a second. But the lack of stakes made me not feel as much for the fading away of those other heroes in the end of the movie. And I felt, you know, sad that I couldn't suspend my disbelief in that to just accept that as a moment, because I just, there's too much that we all talk about. There's too much that we all know about the film business and movie making, and not that other people who watch the series don't as well. But we know that they're not done with Chris Pratt. They're not done with Tom Holland.
Right.
We're not going to not see Chadwick Boseman as Black Panther again.
Right.
And I couldn't separate myself from that in watching the movie. And that's why I think when I go back and watch this again, I'm going to enjoy it more, because it's not necessarily me experiencing it for the first time where I'm like, well, that's not, they're clearly coming back, which some of the theories have been that Avengers, the next one's going to be called Resurrection or Reassembled, which I think would be a terrible name, would be Infinity War Reassembled.
Some assembly required. Reassembly required.
But it's the issue that I've had since Civil War. There are no stakes anymore. And I think that can work in comic books. I just don't think it can work in movies for too long. You're getting to a point where, yes, they've killed Loki, it seems like, with finality. Gamora's probably gone as well, and Heimdall. And I think we'll see in 4 where you're still going to have something happen to Steve Rogers, maybe Iron Man, Tony Stark. There might be some actual deaths, which is what this series needs. But to this point, over the last few films, I've gone and enjoyed them. And as I said before, I've enjoyed them more the second time I've watched them, because I feel like I'm going through the motions and I'm not getting enough actual stakes in these stories to feel invested in these characters.
See, I actually disagree with you on that. I really disagree with the whole, a lot of people have talked about the lack of stakes, the lack of permanent death, right? Like, what, you know, it feels like nobody can die. And if that's the case, you know, if nobody can die, why am I getting nervous? And I don't know. I don't agree with that. I think you can have just as compelling a story. Like, death is not the ultimate stakes. And I think particularly for like superhero movies that are based on comic books that have been around 80 years, not, you know, whatever, you know, I guess in Marvel's case, it's, you know, more like 50 or 60 years, but death is not the best way to hurt these heroes. And
that's very much brings me to the next thing I want to talk about. Sorry, not to interrupt you, but finish your thought and then I'll follow up.
No. I think I kind of said it and then was trying to formulate. I guess the only button I would put on it is like, I don't know what the thing is, because I also don't want it to always be like, you know, the girlfriend or the child or the, you know, the husband, you know, is in danger or whatever, you know, but.
Well, and that's it doesn't need that either. But I feel like stakes doesn't have to mean just death. I'd like to see some actual impact on the overall evolution of characters. And not that there hasn't been within some of the films, but we do get that kind of reset where Iron Man is always Iron Man in the next movie. I mean, there's been some overarching things that he's had to deal with. And
he's quit being Iron Man 3 times, though. I know.
But I think what they've done, like, I would point to Iron Man 3 as like one of the high points of the whole series, because I loved that movie, and I actually loved that was that one. Essentially, it was like that whole movie is Tony dealing with the aftermath of New York, you know, of the events of the first Avengers film. And I felt like those stakes were so high, and it was because it was unique. It wasn't about, oh, is Tony going to live or die, or is he going to save everyone or not? It was really about, like, is he going to be okay?
Yeah.
Emotionally, psychically, is he going to be all right? Because he's had a huge trauma. And that was super, super compelling for me. And you do, I think, always have to reset these guys. Like, that's part of why they are like, there are icons, there are modern myths, blah, blah, blah. But like, they always go back to a zero point, you know?
I think that's something, though, that exists mainly in comic books as like their source material. And that's why they can get away with that. It's kind of soap operatic in that respect. Like,
totally.
I just, to kind of bring it back to Star Wars in the realm, to think of
they created stakes. It's an interesting discussion just to think about, though. They've created stakes in a world which we personally have no stake in. And it should be easy for the Avengers, right? Because the stakes are the actual world that we live in. Like, the world that we know could blow up in the Avengers. In Star Wars, these are distant galaxies far, far away. And somehow we are so connected to their survival. I'm just curious what that is.
Well, I think it's interesting because I actually think we're at a point now where we've seen like the world ending, the city destruction at so many times over, and it starts to just look like CGI noise. That, like, for me, the best stakes, again, I'll point to that Iron Man movie or like Captain America 2, Winter Soldier, the stakes are like, you know, can he save his friend?
But
can
Sam, friend sorry, I apologize for interrupting, but I really think that's not, I feel like stakes were great early on. I think they lost stakes beginning in Civil War. Because I agree with you. I agree with you. I think it was what Iron Man 3 was before Civil War, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, you're right. I am pointing at earlier films, and I guess I'm pointing to them because I've heard it levied as a criticism of the entire franchise.
Yes, I've heard that as well, but I agree with, I think it's more later on because I was, the stakes in Winter Soldier, I felt completely, and I really, that's why that's my favorite Marvel movie.
No, that's a good point. You know, Mike, I don't know that I'll have to think about it. I really will, because I don't
save
know
it for
that
the amendment. Mike and Sam discuss the Marvel Civil Universe. Stakes
Chris,
in the Marvel Civil Universe.
Speaking to what you said, though, because I think that's a very interesting question in terms of stakes and like and characters dying and things like this. And I don't want to sound like too dramatic about this, but like, you know, going into Infinity War, I was like positive that Cap was going to die. Like I was like, it'll just make sense, you know, like for him to die. And like also thinking about like contracts, I was like, they're going to have to kill some people off. And what you were saying in terms of like, why do we care about this? And obviously we get connected to these characters. And what I was thinking about being upset about Cap dying, wasn't that I was worried about the world of the, know, of the movie or like, oh, Tony's going to be really upset. Although that could be very emotional as well. Is that I, as a viewer who has grown an affection for this character, I don't want to witness him die.
There you go. And you're worried about losing the character.
Yeah. And so I've been, you know, over the last few days, like kind of recontextualizing the ending of Infinity War, knowing, like Mike said, that like Spider-Man 2 is in production. They're definitely making a Black Panther 2. Like these characters are not gone. But I was thinking about how just the act of seeing them disappear and like be taken away is like emotionally affecting enough to make those stakes high. And I do agree that the Marvel Universe does have a stakes issue because it's like in Iron Man 3, Tony gives up being Iron Man and they like give it like they put like a period at the end of that. And then in Age of Ultron, they completely ignore it. Like it's the next movie in the series and they completely ignore it.
Yeah.
But like in this, it was just the experience of seeing these characters being taken away in such a chilling manner was affecting enough. And then instead of being like, oh, are these people dead? Because like it's pretty obvious that they're not, you know, other than the ones who we saw like actually die. But now the interesting thing is like, what's going to be the solution to this? Like there's going to have to be some way to bring these people back. And like, while that does undercut the stakes of like life or death, it is still interesting and kind of a bit of like having your cake and eating it too. But I do think that it's an interesting way to remind us what it means to watch these characters disappear.
Yeah. Or just, to equate that, take that back to Star Wars, I think it's the same, that same feeling. That's kind of what motivates the whole thing. It's just well-crafted characters.
Chris, you bringing it back to Star Wars leads me to something I texted all of you, and I think this might be a longer conversation, but I want to think about The Last Jedi, the reaction, the fanboy reaction to The Last Jedi. And obviously we've talked about this a lot on the podcast, and I want to be clear that I think Marvel and this series has been one of my favorite things to happen to cinema over the last 10 years. But I think without any intention on their part and without it being a fault of them making anything bad, because I don't think they're bad, I think Marvel and the Avengers have done damage to blockbuster cinema by conditioning audiences to play by the Marvel rules. And so when you spend the last 10 years, over 18 films, watching movies where, for the most part, you know what's going to happen. Maybe not so much as we've gotten into Infinity War, but for a lot of it, there was following the comic book lead-in. There were variations, but as we said, the lack of stakes, the fact that maybe people can anticipate what's going to be happening because there is a source material, character development not always carrying over to the next film, and rarely the pillars of these characters changing, and rarely do they ever challenge the audience being something that allowed or resulted in fanboys struggling to see a hero and a character challenge their preconceived notions of who that character and who that hero is why we had such a strong backlash to Luke Skywalker and who he is in The Last Jedi. And that's, again, I'm not faulting Marvel. I think it's why some of these people who've now been conditioned to feel this way about blockbuster films hated The Last Jedi.
Don't turn Luke into a comic book character.
But that's why Star Wars means more to me than Marvel.
Sure. Well, I mean, like, just in pure, like we said, there have been 19 Marvel movies in the last 10 years. And they just can't carry the amount of weight that like a Star Wars movie does. Mm-hmm. But I think what you said is very interesting. And this, you know, kind of full circle, because people blame Jaws and Star Wars for like ruining movies. You know, even though it wasn't their fault, you know, like what they ended up doing. But I think that that really is interesting, because Marvel, and this is what we love about them, they're giving us dessert all the time. Mm-hmm. And like, that's fun and it's great. But it's like, if you're used to eating dessert all the time and then all of a sudden someone puts like a full meal in front of you, it all of a sudden seems very tough.
That's a perfect. I love the way you describe that.
Yep.
You know, so it's and I do agree that I think that that may be a factor in this, that it's like The Last Jedi presented us something like challenging, and like it was still like a big like populist movie, you know, like it was still like a very big crowd pleaser, but it had some challenging character stuff, and like the Marvel movies are not challenging. And that's what we love about them, you know, like it's like, you know what you're getting. You go in and they're the most fun and it's great. But also, but like, that's not what The Last Jedi was. And people, I think, kind of threw a little bit of a fit.
Right. And I just want to confirm, I am here with the Guinness World Record keeper. We have set stakes the most time on any podcast in existence. So congratulations, guys. We did it.
What is this? What is this? The Mortons podcast?
This podcast has been USDA approved.
I think that those I do want to say that. I think that's one of the factors in terms of the tantrum of The Last Jedi. I think that there are other factors sexism and racism that were part of the tantrum of The Last Jedi. But I do think in terms of like conditions, huge audiences, they have been conditioned to just like be given what they want.
Right.
Sam, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that. I mean, because I know you have Marvel background maybe more than the rest of us, or maybe more so than I do, I guess.
No, I think you're definitely right. I think we are. I don't know that I have a fully formed opinion yet, but I would definitely say it's like undeniable. We are in the middle, or maybe even we're over the crest of like a sea change moment with what Marvel did. And I think definitely I would look to like, you know, what they did with. I'm a big comic book movie fan, and historically that's been. Actually, like more out growing up, like comics wise, I was always like a DC guy. But I liked like all comic book movies as they came out. And I think what Marvel did like for a long time kind of just like ruin the chances of anybody else to do it as well. You know, I mean, like once Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy ended, like the DC stuff wasn't as good. I think you've seen like the X-Men films have not been able to keep pace. And the only way they've started to turn the corner is by doing these one-off, really unique stories, you know, your Logan, your Deadpool, that kind of thing. So I'm seeing that direct impact. But I also think you're right that it's like the way, you know, what everyone has zeroed in on as being so successful about this Marvel universe is like the universe aspect. They're like, look, it's all interconnected. We're seeing all the characters and, you know, they are all fun. They're bright. They're poppy. They are for like families and kids too can have fun. So
except for when Spider-Man fades and dies in front of all of us, that's probably
after like the most
as you said before,
my
the
brain
pod.
Forever. It's after, burned like my brain the forever.
Heartbreaking plea. Like, I mean, gosh, let's hand it to Tom Holland. He made that scene really, really
in
memorable.
A Marvel movie. We watched a 17-year-old kid realize he was going to die, have to reckon with that, then beg for it not to happen, and then it happens. It was
harrowing. That was the best part of the movie to me.
No. I don't agree. Oh, it was awful.
It was very affecting. I don't think it should have been in the movie.
And
I think it was incongruous with like the universe that they had set up.
I also liked it. It was kind of Marvel's jab at Sony. It's like, see, we got Spider-Man, and guess what we're gonna do with him?
No, see, I think you're. I don't want to go down. That's a longer conversation, but I would say, Ryan, that's something I would agree with. Actually, I did think that maybe the whole of Infinity War was a little incongruous with what we've been given for 10 years. And that is part of something that it's like, I'm waiting for part two of whatever this duology is to like,
I heard it's rated R
to like set it right. You know, because I think if they get back to some of the more fun, bright spots of what it is to be an Avenger and save the day in the second part, you know, maybe that makes the whole thing a better or more, I'm going to use the word congruous, you know, but a more like consistent watch with the rest of the series. But yeah, I do think you might be onto something, Mike, with your theory about like how it's put something in the water that then audiences watch all big movies with a little bit of that, you know, Marvel expectation.
Because I also think we have to think of the audience that's not the crazy film goer like all of us are, or who are all as obsessed with it. Because even though I brought up the fanboys, there's like varying degrees of fanboys, and there's the more surface level fanboy who's only into all of it. Then there's the movie level fanboy who's dissecting all the way these movies are made. So some of that just comes down to what fans were talking about. But I find it interesting to consider, because I don't think there has to be a rationale, but I am just curious as to why the backlash is what it is to The Last Jedi. Mm-hmm. And that's what popped into my head after seeing the film.
I think that's really interesting. It didn't occur to me. Thank you for bringing it up.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm glad to,
for real. I think that is like very, yeah, that's very interesting.
Shame on all of us. Shame. Shame.
Well, I think that's pretty much going to do it for this edition of the pod. We did get in some good Avengers Infinity War reaction, and I'm glad we did that. It did tie back into Star Wars, and it does give us an idea of where things might be going, because if we get one film a year, are we going to feel this way about Star Wars? Or maybe, you know, depending on whose perspective it is, but could this similar instance that we're running into with Marvel happen with Star Wars as we continue to play this out? It's a conversation we've had a couple of times on the podcast, but interesting how these years will go on. It's going to be a lot of fodder for us to bring up on this podcast. No reason for this show to end anytime soon.
These are the droids you're looking for.
This is madness.